we've now started the tape recorder, so just be aware that we're taping. I'd like to introduce Tracy Curley to you. Tracy is an assurance partner, and she will tell us what that means, at Marcum, which is one of the largest independent public accounting and advisory firms in the nation. There are offices in major business markets in the United States, Grand Cayman, and China. Her area is the New England high tech, and she's the industry group leader. Tracy has more than 25 years of experience in providing audit and financial reporting services to both public and private companies. She has a concentration in technology and life sciences, and she also has an experience in retail and distribution, as well as oil and gas services. Tracy's been involved with SEC registrations, SEC reporting, all the things that you would expect. She recently was elected to the board of directors of the North Shore Technology Council. And so her experience spans a private development stage, startup, all the way through international multi-billion dollar public companies. So Tracy, why are you called an assurance partner and not an audit partner?
Well, in assurance, there is a multitude of services we can provide. And when you refer to somebody as an audit partner, you're really just referring to the task of an engagement of an audit. So under the assurance group, there are several attest engagements that we can provide to our clients. So okay. We prefer the broader reference, but I do have a fair number of audits that I'm the partner, signing partner on.
Okay. So, Tracy, it's yours.
All right. Thank you very much, and thank you for inviting me to be here today. So I have handed out to the group two handouts thus far. One is some information regarding what the purpose of the audit committee is in a company, and this is really for a public company, but by and large, best practices are also replicated in private companies. And then the second handout I gave is part of a three-part handout that I'm going to give over the course of our conversation today. So everybody's read sort of the general purpose of an audit committee. There's 8 bullets here, but I would like to draw our attention today to 3 bullets in particular that I want to make sure that we all understand and are going to be sort of the focus, if you will, on the conversation today. The first bullet oversees the accounting and financial reporting process of the company and the audits of the company's financial statements. The second bullet, it takes or recommends to the board of directors of the company to take appropriate action to oversee the qualifications, independence, and performance of the company's independent registered public accounting firm. And then the third to last bullet from the bottom oversees the procedures for addressing complaints and concerns regarding accounting, internal accounting controls, or auditing matters. And so we are the board of directors, and we are in a session, and we're going to discuss a situation with a public company. But Mike has a question first.
Is the audit committee not involved with issues related to use of, let's call it, flexibility in accounting policy for reporting purposes? Or is that below the level of the board, and management has carte blanche to do their own interpretation of accounting policy for reporting?
Yes. And there would only be a discussion with the audit committee when there is a situation where there's a disagreement with management, where the auditors have a disagreement with management.
Okay.
So a lot of people don't realize this, but there's a lot of gray areas within accounting. And
really?
What number do you want it to be, right? And so management's responsibility is to ensure that the financial information that they're providing for audits and also for financial statement and footnote disclosure purposes in accordance with GAAP. And there are areas where it's gray and subject to interpretation for how you account for certain things and how you disclose certain things. So audit committee would only get involved if there's a disagreement between the auditors and management with regards to those. Any other questions? All right, so let's go over the background of this company. The background is this is a small public materials technology company specializing in biomedical polymers for extrusion, injecting molds, films, and coatings for a wide variety of uses subcutaneously. So it's definitely in the life science sector. It was founded in 1993 and public since 1996. Except for the current year, 2016, the five previous years, 2011 through 2015, the company has been unable to file their 10K on time, and a number of the quarterly filings have also not been filed on time. They have had four different independent accounting firms as the auditors in the last 6 years, 2011 to 2015. There have been no going concerns for the last years, but always on the cusp. They have certification signed in 2009 and 10 was by an acting CFO who then subsequently became the CFO who signed the certs from 2011 through 2014 as the CFO. No certification for a chief accounting officer was in the filed 2015 10-K. No material weaknesses reported in the 10-K for the last 6 years, 2011 to 2015. So as the board, when we look at those stats, what are our thoughts, what are our concerns, and what kind of questions do we have? And Ellen, I knew you'd be the first one, so what do you got?
I got five bullets.
Yeah.
The first one, I'd identify as red flags. So I'm feeling really concerned right now as a board member. 10-K's late, changes in, you know, in the accounting firm, that's a red flag.
Yep.
The situation with the CFO is a red flag. The fact there's no chief accountant is a red flag. Frankly, the fact there's no material weakness given everything else is actually a red flag
yep.
to me. So those are what I call red flags. Then I have, actually four colors. Then I have three questions. One which is, do we have any information on whether there have been any complaints or information through the whistleblower activity? If no, are we sure our system is working well? So that's a question. Two, what do we know about the staff quality in finance and turnover or qualifications? And three, and this is my last question, sounds like, smells like, there's a lot of push on numbers from the CEO. And the CEO is just driving to a number and rolling over people as they go. And that's just a guess, it's just a question. So red flags is section one and then three questions.
So Larry, I think we're done here.
But I think the flags are burning. They're not just red, but
yeah, they probably are.
I think the only thing that Ellen forgot to mention is my first thought would be to ask for a copy of the D&O insurance.
Make sure it's
still covered and the premiums are paid
before
I write my resignation letter.
So in the subsequent handouts I'm going to give, if you don't mind, can we address those
Absolutely.
Questions in my subsequent handouts? Because those are part of my subsequent handouts, actually. So you hit the nail on the head on some of the things we're going to cover shortly. Any other comments?
As a board, why did we let this go on for so long?
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, this is 5 years.
So I'm the new chairman of the board, and I want to know that, too.
But you've been the chair for 5 years.
No, I haven't. Yeah. I didn't say that. I did not say that.
So could it be that the rest of the board was handpicked by the CEO who might be railroading the numbers and also has the board in his pocket or her pocket?
Well, typically with a small public company, a lot of times you do see that as a possibility. Absolutely.
I'm just not understanding one thing, if you could explain for my benefit. The bullet point, no going concern for the last 6 years, but always on the cusp. What does that mean?
So as an auditor, well, as a company, you have to assess at your annual audits, and then if you're a public company on a quarterly basis, whether you are going to be able to continue to exist for a year. And there's actually new rules that are now saying it's not even a year from your year end, it's a year from when your auditors issue their audit opinion, that date. And so you have to do that analysis, and it's called a going concern analysis. So when I say but always on the cusp, means they always somehow are able to, with their forecasts and projections, and as auditors, we have to actually look prospectively back at estimates to determine the quality of those estimates. They're always able to squeak by as not being a going concern. But they're always on the cusp. It's always like, you know, they've got to get that financing. They've got to get that, you know, that next sale. Otherwise, they would fall into a situation where the auditors would have to put a paragraph into the opinion highlighting the fact that the company's a going concern and it may not be around in a year.
You might want to talk about the ramifications of a company having to do that. That's huge for
right. Sometimes that triggers being in violation of your debt covenants, which then means that then there's implications to your financial statements.
It's a red flag for stock.
It's red flag for investors. You not yet, but it could ultimately lead to that. You could be in violation of your debt covenants, which then the bank, as you know, will
pull the plug.
The one that I think of, the most spectacular failure I've seen in a number of years was A123.
Yeah.
That their first batch of batteries out of the gate were defective. And because of that, they had to adjust financial information, which then meant that they were in default, which then meant that the banks shrunk the line of credit, which then meant they couldn't pay, and within 6 months, a multi-billion dollar company was in bankruptcy. Yes?
You know, when I look at this, I'm reminded of, we had a woman named Kathy Fogle here about a year and a half ago, and she talked about some work she was doing about independent directors versus independent and powerful directors. Mm-hmm. And you can be an independent director legally on a 10K. On the other hand, you know, we are in the same church and the same golf club, and so you have a relationship with the CEO that at least on paper won't show. Or you are a consultant at Ed Ross's consulting firm, and I put you on, and you're also getting some contracts from me. So you are legally independent, but you're not very powerful, and you're not an ability to challenge me. Whereas one of the things about Ellen is that she's both independent and powerful. She doesn't need me for her income. She's got her own networks other than me.
Oh, I do need you.
But my first reading is, if I was a new board member and I saw this, I would say maybe I let myself get snookered by saying most of our board members are independent, and I didn't really inquire to the next stage. Is, yeah, you're independent, but what's your social relationships, what's your economic relationships with the CEO? Are you really, really independent, or are you just independent in a superficial legal sense? And this seems to me, as I look around my fellow board members, I want to be out of this room.
We're all new. I think we have a new chairman of the board who's brought in a whole new board.
Right, and so we're assessing the situation. Okay.
Is that true, or is that an assumption?
No, that's assumption. That's assumption. Yeah.
How do you feel better, Larry?
Yeah. I feel better. Feel better. Would you unlock the door, please?
See, that's part of the story here, the question, and I may be manufacturing this, but...
Well, if I give too much of the facts, you'll know who it is, so I couldn't do that. So
but
this is a true company.
This is a few years that this has been going on, and the company's been
public for 20 years or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So something's happened recently. I don't know if a management change has occurred in the last 5-6 years or a board change has occurred in the last 5 years.
Well, I only went back and looked at the facts 5 years.
Okay, so
I didn't have all week to, yeah. I figured if we went back 5 years, that would be enough to sort of demonstrate a pattern that does need to be addressed, I think, as the board, you know, to Ellen's point of, you know, we need to have quality resources. We need to understand the underlying reasons, you know, why these things are occurring. Tim, you had something you wanted to say.
Yeah, that was my point. It seemed that the county should be relatively straightforward with the company cost of goods sold. I mean, paid something for the materials, it's processing, there's inventory, there's sales. I mean, where is the issue? I mean, is there a timing issue for booking sales? It just shouldn't, we were not talking about EBITDA for some high-tech company that's, you know, got tons of options and things like that. So I think pretty quickly it should be able to isolate where the complexity is and the difficulties are with those financial statements.
But, you know, it's probably a 5-year-old problem and they're just kicking the can.
Any other comments?
Well, it is very telling based on the comments that you made here that the CEO must have incredible influence over the board because of this repetitive poor behavior, which should be the responsibility operating from a CFO. Just don't keep doing that. So I'm trying to figure out what other reasons why. Maybe that's
shall I give you the next set of facts? Yes.
One other procedural kind of question. This were in the real world, would you have the ability to have a meaningful discussion with partners at the other 3 or 4 predecessor audit firms?
The chair of the audit committee.
Mm-hmm. Well, as if you were the if you were the incoming auditors,
you as a board member, head of the audit committee.
Oh yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So they would meet with you, and you would get an honest recitation of what happened.
Yes. Yes.
That assumed you did it after the first audit firm was on.
Well, that's correct. That's correct. So let's go to some other facts here. Yes.
I threw the book out.
So we didn't ask the criminal questions. That should have been obvious.
So more facts about this company. From 1997 through 1999, the CFO of the company mentioned that we've been talking about was an acting CFO of a public company that came under SEC investigation.
I would like to state for the record, Steibel Peabody did not do the retained search that brought this guy in.
Wow. Did you do his outplacement service?
The CFO was accused of assisting in document falsification and was permanently enjoined from violating directly or indirectly 5 different sections of the Exchange Act. And the SEC also required the CFO to pay civil money penalties pursuant to the Exchange Act in the amount determined by the court. And the SEC did not permanently prohibit the CFO from acting as an officer or director of any issuer that has a class of securities registered pursuant to the Exchange Act or that is required to file reports pursuant to the Exchange Act. One other detail that I'd like to put, from 1999 through 2009, when this individual was appointed as the acting CFO, they actually acted as an advisor to the company. So our thoughts, concerns, questions, now that we have more information about the CFO. It was the CFO during the period when they were unable to file their 10-K, when they had multiple changes in auditors. Yes.
But he's gone or is he still?
He is gone by 2016.
But hopefully this is a brand new board we're talking about. This such a dereliction of duty. It's unbelievable. And what Larry said, they clearly go to the same church and go to the same country club with the CEO. I mean, this is just bizarre. Why would a public accounting firm take this one on? Fourth in line.
So in this situation, when you think about the fact that this happened in 1997, 1999, we only went back 5 years, so we're talking about 2010. A lot of times an accounting firm will look back 10 years. This was known, and for client acceptance, there was a great deal of focus on this in talking with the CEO, the chairman of the board, the chairman of the audit committee, and understanding, has this guy rehabilitated? Is there any concerns with regards to this individual? And the answer was unequivocally no. He's a good guy. He got caught in a bad situation. You know, it's unfortunate what happened, but, you know, he's been a trusted advisor to us for, you know, 10 years before we appointed him as acting CFO, and then we appointed him as CFO. So we have no problems whatsoever, no questions, no concerns whatsoever about this individual.
I have a question. Do we have any knowledge if the accounting firms quit or were fired? Just a curiosity question. I mean,
so I know of one accounting firm that after the audit was in the process of going through the conversations, and we'll talk about that next, about disengaging after the audit.
So this is June or July 2016. He's still the CFO.
No, he's not. I wanted to kind of give you, I could have cut off at 2015 while he was still the CFO, but I did want to at least let you know that there was a change. We're the change. Okay, and so something happened. I'm not privy to that information now anymore, but something happened.
But I guess just to kind of come back to my question,
yep.
I'm just trying to understand. Four different independent accounting firms, which we've already talked about,
yep.
Flat, but do we know, so we know that one was interested in disengaging. We don't know about the other three, right?
Do not. Mm-hmm. I do not. Oh, I know one for sure was not interested in disengaging.
Because that's huge when an accounting firm basically quits an account.
Right.
Assuming that everybody in this room is part of the change.
Yes.
And that nobody here is from the old regime, would I be correct in assuming that the CEO is also new?
No. So we're going to talk about that in a moment. So I want to give you the next set of. Yeah. So I want to give you. I want to give you.
Copy of the D&O insurance.
Yeah. So I want to give you.
Is the door locked?
So I want to give you the next set.
Oh
God. Of facts.
So the CFO that is now gone, he certified in 2015, correct? So we actually don't. 2016, we don't even know who could.
The CEO certified as both the CEO and the CAO.
In 2015.
In 16.
What's his risk measurement?
I know, exactly.
So did you say the CEO is no longer there? The
CEO is still there.
Still there.
So we're doing a strip tease. I wanted to kind of give you some information sort
are
of
you,
to...
Are you sure we're not talking about Donald Trump and we're all members of the Trump family?
No.
Can you just talk about, what about the financial results of the company over the last 5-10 years? Just in terms of, are they making money, are they losing money, are the sales going up?
They are making money. Sales are relatively flat. But as I said, they've always been able to sort of squeak by and not getting a going concern opinion. That's what we call it. But there's always language in there about liquidity and that, you know, that they're going to have to raise capital. So they're very good. They were very good at raising capital.
Tracy, I was making a joke, but I guess I wasn't making a joke. Is in this case here,
yeah.
In the context of us as the board members,
right.
Are there any family relationships that we need to know about?
No, there isn't. So let's go through this, and then we're going to talk as the board.
What percent ownership does the CEO?
I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know. That would have been a good thing for me to find out.
What is his employment contract look like? What needs to be documented for grounds for dismissal?
Well, why don't we talk about that as a board?
I'd like to.
Yeah. So more information to give you to finally finish the striptease so we can actually get to the...
What does a ghost mean?
He disappeared.
Disappeared. He's MIA.
He's MIA without any explanation, without explaining why he's MIA. So during the audits, the CFO was known to not tell the whole story. Not really lie, but not really tell the whole story. Try to tell the engagement team how they should audit, the scope, you don't need to do that. Ghost for weeks at a time without any forewarning, and then still expect the audit to be done in time for the filing to be done. Be rude or unprofessional, make very unprofessional comments, and make comments that bordered on threatening independence. Well, you know, I could just fire you, kind of thing. Independence. So, and at least on in one instance, the chair of the audit committee was informed of the above behaviors by the auditors, and no action was taken. So here's the string of things.
The auditors know about. Because we don't, I mean, it's right. Possible, right?
But the CFO continued in that position for several years after that.
But it happened once with four?
I don't know, at least at one point in time. So to Ellen's point, the whistleblower, you know, somebody talked to a board member who happened to also be the chair of the audit committee, because in your oversight as the audit committee, you have oversight of the auditors.
Right.
And so the auditors, at least on one occasion, talk to the chairman of the audit committee about the CFO and the situation. So
we don't know, just to clarify this question,
yep.
We don't know, one, if the chair of the audit committee investigated the complaint, right? We don't know. We don't know if he talked to the CEO, which probably would help anyway. We don't know if he...
Well, we do know that he talked to the CEO, because the CEO was part of the conversation, as was the CFO. It was a come-to-Jesus conversation.
And we do know that action was taken on the CFO most recently. There was no action taken on the CEO.
But this was one instance. We don't know when that occurred. That was
several years before the CFO was no longer the CFO.
But we do know the action that was taken is he was no longer the CFO, so we have to assume for
reasons. But it took many years for that.
Took 3 years.
I agree, but he's no longer.
Yeah, so the situation is we've got a public company. It's had multiple auditors.
Right.
It's had a ineffective CFO that has impacted the filings, which clearly probably impacts credibility with investors.
Yep.
We have a CEO that's still in place that allowed a whole bunch of stuff to occur over the last several years by the CFO. We have an audit chair who may be sitting at this table, who knew at least on one occasion, and I can't help but think that there probably were other times that the audit chair was made aware of things, because you have executive conversations with your audit committees as your auditors.
Right.
So I can't help but think that there were other conversations that the audit chair was aware of. So the question for the board is, have we turned a corner, or do we still have more work to do as the board? So let's just assume that we fired the CFO last year. We finally said, this is it. We can't, we don't care, you know, how great of an advocate he's been for the company. We just can't have this happening anymore. And we've turned a corner. What else do we need to do? What else do we need to address as the board?
Well, I'd say the first two things I think of is delving more into the role of the CEO, and that raises a lot of questions, right? Because if the CEO was part and parcel to this, I mean, we really have a performance issue, a trust issue, an ethical issue with the CEO. The second piece is immediately, as the chair of the new chair of the audit committee, I mean, you know, frankly, this is still a public company. Reports have to be prepared. We have one in 60 days. What is the quality of the team on the ground now? Are they really good? What do we need? What are the resources we need? If we don't have them permanently, we better get interns in, but we better get qualified people so we can start fixing these issues. Because when the new accounting firm comes in, and we're gonna make sure we get a really good one in, there are gonna be material weaknesses. There's gonna be a mess there. So we better get the team in that can actually both identify it and fix it so we can rest, sleep well at night over there. But in the meantime, the whole board has to be dealing with the CEO issue.
You know,
that's my view.
I'm not on the audit committee, so, but I'm deeply concerned about—
Aren't you glad?
In this case, but I'm deeply concerned about the structure of the business. For example, the sales and marketing, something's going on there that's not right. And so the board has to understand the business. That's one of the things that board members have to do and don't always do,
mm-hmm.
is to truly, and I think he said something about that. And they have to understand the fundamentals of the business. And there's something going on here fundamentally wrong. In terms of the sales marketing practices, there's lots of ways to play those games. And so I think we need to go back to basics and understand the business as a board.
I was basically gonna make the same observation by saying that we are collectively members of the audit committee. We're also board members. And maybe in the first instance, we are board members. And you know, this recitation, the history of things here, suggests that we're looking at symptoms of some serious business problems, mm-hmm. and maybe we as board members rather than audit committee members should momentarily focus on the big picture and see who is addressing that stuff and then step back into our more specialized role of audit committee members and deal with that agenda.
Or is this a live to fight another day? Meaning this is so here and now and critically imperative that we've got to fix this and in parallel do everything else that's been raised. But quite honestly, if you don't fix this, you might not live to fight to figure out the other things.
That's where I was, in parallel.
And the question is, truly, are we a new board or are we not? Like, so the CEO's here, but how many of these board members are old versus new? And have we really address the core issue, because this CFO probably was, you know, an escape goat.
Well, and think about, you don't like to think that your board members are not actively engaged, but there are times when I have observed that there are boards where you have board members that are not actively engaged. How much of that was the situation here?
Or still is.
You know, did all of those board members really know or even think about the fact that you had a revolving door of auditors and that, you know, you have several things that were red flags? Did they even care enough to be worried about, to your point, your D&O insurance and what's my liability associated with being affiliated with this company when these things are happening?
I'm anticipating, Tracy, that there might have been somebody on the board who is more R&D and into the business of the business, mm-hmm. and it's very easy for them to say there are other people on the board who are much more knowledgeable about the financials and the goings-on with the accounting firm, and let them do that. I'm doing my piece. And so they're engaged, but they're not holistically engaged.
Because that's not their expertise, so they're relying upon other people's expertise.
Right.
That could be. I mean, the chair of the audit committee was, would definitely be considered an expert in his field as, a financial expert. So, and perhaps he kept telling the board, hey, we got it handled, don't worry about it. It's, you know, this is typical of small public companies.
No, I think that's a cop-out. I mean, you've got everybody with different cross-functional backgrounds, sales, marketing, it could be R&D, it could be, this is common sense.
Yeah.
So regardless of your functional expertise and or background, anyone can figure out that there's significant deep-rooted challenges here that need to be addressed.
big red flag to wait because it's screaming.
You're ignoring your responsibilities as a board.
So as the board, what would be your first priority to address?
Well, that's hard to answer because I still don't think we have the full story. So given what's been parceled out to date, I think the building's on fire, so we need to put the fire out.
Right.
Let's address the financial side of things. Now, the reason for that, we need the parallel path and get into. It could be a sales and marketing issue, it could be R&D related, it could be a variety of other things, but we need to address that first and foremost. Dig into the other to figure it out. But if we don't address that, then on the cusp is going to not be the cusp. It's going to be our reality, which will very quickly descend into bankruptcy. So I think we start there, but then we look in parallel to figure out the other core issues and then begin to address them as well.
So would you sack the CEO right away, or do you think you need him?
No, I need to see his employment contract. Does he own 50% or greater of the business? There's not enough fact and detail to determine what those next steps are. And regardless of those two things, if he does have 50% or what is employment.
Okay, so let's assume he doesn't have 50%. Let's assume that he doesn't have an ironclad employment contract. What then?
Then we need to document poor performance. And therefore, we need to investigate what did he know, when did he know it, what role did he play in it, how did he act, how did he not act. We need fact.
I would almost venture to say that we are pursuing him, assuming under the direction of the CEO. And,
you can assume that, but we don't know.
The CEO attested to the financials in the last year, right?
Yes.
The CFO didn't.
And an understanding
that's a red flag.
Well, we don't know that they're incorrect.
Well, an opinion was issued, so you know you don't know, no material weakness. So somehow the auditors were able to get through it.
So I went. Luckily, I don't think this is a company I know, but I'm just thinking of a situation that is different but has elements. And what we did, we jumped in with an independent investigation. Really independent investigation. It's always shocking what you learn.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not privy to this most recent year, but I was intrigued by the fact that they didn't have the CFO signing, but yet they were able to file the 10-K on time.
Yes.
Which is good news. I suspect they probably have a CFO consultant in there that is probably pretty savvy and was able to get his arms around everything and put some processes in place to ensure that the filing got done on time. But because he was a consultant or because of the mess in the past, he was not willing to sign as the CAO on the certs.
Can we trust the numbers we're seeing now?
Sorry?
Can we trust the numbers we're seeing now? Again, the quarterly numbers, we have the most recent numbers. I think that's, I would want to know whether or not what we're seeing is valid or not, and we can trust it, because if they've got, if we can't start there and figure out what we're looking at as trustworthy, then we have a huge problem. How do you start?
So
I agree. I think, you know, it's either you've got to figure out whether you have a procedural issue, which I'm assuming has been going on for so long, maybe procedural issues would get sorted out eventually, right? So therefore, to me, it would seem like there's something else going on where maybe on the sales side, things are not what they are made to. That would be my guess as well.
Well, think about the one statement of the CFO ghosting, right? For weeks.
Here's
so.
Danbury.
In jail.
Yeah. I mean, you know, going on a bender, you know, I don't know. But I mean, just the fact that, you know, if when we are putting together the timeline for the conducting of an audit, it's very precise. You know, we're going to give the client a request for information. We typically have them provide it to us, you know, at least a week in advance of when we start field work. We start field work at a certain point. We expect we're going to finish field work at a certain point. We expect we're going to issue have time to go through a draft of the financial statements. If you've got a very fine-tuned machine and you have a project plan in place, there's a good chance it doesn't take into consideration that the CFO is going to ghost for a couple weeks. So, and I know that year the 10-K was not filed on time, primarily because the CFO ghosted and the audit firm was not able to finish their procedures when they anticipated, and it took a little bit longer. So it could be the fact that that there was a process issue associated with the resource that was in charge of that whole process.
Can I ask a question? I'm just, as I think back to your first chart, background, I mean, just everything all the times with the SEC that I'm aware of, if a company has a repetitive nature of not filing your 10K on time, to me that's like it's not only a waving flag to the auditors and to the company, but it's a waving red flag at the SEC.
So let me clarify that. As you know, you can file an NT, right?
Yeah.
That and for quarterly, you know, it's 5 days, for the annual it's 10 days, right? So they always file the NT, not timely.
Yep.
And always filed within that period. So as long as you file that,
yeah,
even though it's late, the SEC doesn't consider it to be late.
Okay.
Sorry, I shouldn't be that clear.
Not quite late enough
okay. to awesome. Be delisted or potentially be considered for delisting.
Got it.
So let's change the scenario. CEO owns 50% or more of the stock.
To that point, Teresa.
Yeah.
So the SEC would tolerate these NT filings year after year after year?
Yes.
Yep.
It's in their regulations.
Yep.
That's kind of like the IRS. I'm not going to file my taxes. I did an extension.
It's the government allowed.
Yep, it is. I mean, sometimes there are things that happen right before a company files, a subsequent event, and it takes them a while to get their arms around it because of the reporting requirements, and then they've got to file an extension.
But that's why I ask about, you know, repetitive behavior.
Numerous
years.
Yep. So I mentioned A123 earlier, and what happened with A123 is they filed for bankruptcy in October, and they never filed they never filed with the SEC to go dark before their Q was required to be filed in November. So when they got around to, after the implosion, filing to go dark with the SEC said, you're not timely with your filings. And they had to go back and file that Q in order to then be able to go dark. So as soon as they filed that Q, the SEC approved them to go dark. And the reason that was so important is because they had executives and board of directors who were on other public companies, and they were afraid that they were going to get sanctioned because of A123. So they had to go back and do it.
They weren't sanctioned.
No, they weren't sanctioned because they eventually filed and then we're able to go dark.
Ooh.
So yeah. So let's assume
owns. So they have good attorneys. I mean,
yeah. Let's assume that the CEO has more than 50% and has a really good contract. As a board, do we have any leverage at all?
Can resign.
I don't think there's any other alternative. Is you have to weigh the risk and reward associated with being on that board, and you know, determining.
I mean, it's nasty, like, you know, resign and do the whistleblower thing, and you know, if there's
the government, if it's a big enough case, goes after them, and you actually do get something. But I doubt.
But we don't know if anything illegal happened. We have a lot of red flags that tell us that the.
My belief is, and again, it's an assumption. So my assumption is that they were intimately involved. So yeah, they can resign or step down, but I think they were smart enough to know that they were a part of what took place.
But I think it is very interesting, because based on these facts, we all have these little red flags that are waving at us, right? It smells bad, it doesn't feel good, it, you know, it's like, how many more things could possibly be there to not, when there's this much smoke, there's usually fire, but at the same time, we actually don't have enough facts yet, which is what brings me back to get that independent investigation going or you fix the financial house. And if the CEO isn't willing to have an independent investigation, then you have the decision whether or not you resign or come forward. Because if he's not willing to do an independent investigation, that's not only a red flag, that's a...
Well, what if he says, you know, but we got rid of the CFO. We got rid of the problem. I don't see any point in doing an independent investigation. We're bringing in a new team completely. They're going to make sure that we're all squared away.
Well, I think unless we have a core understanding and root cause as to what occurred and why it occurred, how do we know it won't reoccur?
Right.
So I think it's as much about that.
That's right.
It's tone from the top.
Yeah.
A question that I have is sort of one cut under the CEO's overarching influence and responsibility, and that is the audit committee putting in place the expectations, the processes, and the team under a new CFO and holding that person accountable and being able to take a look at that entire process and team, regardless of the CEO. And if everything, it goes back to page one, there was something askew here that the audit committee failed to address in terms of performance.
Mm-hmm.
I almost forget about the rest of these,
mm-hmm.
except for maybe a footnote on, did the audit committee chairman ever tell the rest of the audit committee what they found out? But it's sort of like, if that's all taken care of, are we still, then we work on the other fundamentals as the CEO, person, and are they doing the right things for sales and marketing? So.
Other thoughts?
Can I just ask Ellen, the independent investigation that you're proposing, what would it look like?
Well, it could take several forms, right?
In this case, what would you recommend?
Well, I think you'd talk to the board about it, right, the rest of the board, and say it can be focused in on exactly the way you're approaching it, or it can be direct, and if you start at the core of the financials and work out, they'll eventually answer your question related to the CEO. You don't have to necessarily focus the investigation on the CEO. And if he truly owns 50%, I'd probably start underneath and build up. You'd eventually touch the team underneath the CEO, which will get to the whole different business areas.
Because every question you ask, if the arrow is pointing to the CEO, then you know your answer.
And it may not be.
That's right. It may be that it was pointing to the old CFO, and the CEO gave the old CFO a more latitude and a responsibility than he should have.
Which is a different answer.
Yeah.
Or as somebody suggested, maybe he or she were the bullies that were driving the CFO.
Right.
You can't let the CEO on the board.
Right.
Period.
But if you are on a board where the CEO owns more than 50% of the company, how do you not let the CEO run the board?
As a board member, I might be resigning.
Yeah.
If something doesn't happen real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, more frequent than you realize. How many are chairman, CEO,
yeah.
You know, they're the recruiting arm of the board.
Right.
So
right.
Easier said than done.
Question here, I think you pointed out that you have evidence of wrongdoing, or are you just referring to a scenario situation where, you know, there is procedural incompetence and or, you know,
well, during an audit, even though it's not a forensic audit, and but you are on the lookout for fraud, and there was no identification, no disclosures in any of the years of fraud, So, and you're required to ask executives and certain key board members, you know, are you aware of any fraud and that sort of thing. So there is no evidence of illegal acts, but lots of red flags about mismanagement and abuse probably of authority.
So let's come full circle, because again, I think there's a lot of still unknowns.
Yes.
So if we were to invoke best practices, maybe there's no illegal activity, but we don't know. So
right.
The best practices would be to follow Ellen's suggestion of let's get an investigation independent, and let's have the data and fact come forward for two reasons. One, to determine if in fact that is or is not the case, and then secondly, what do we do to fix the underlying core issue to make sure that it doesn't reoccur, such that we are filing on time and we are accurate and our accounting firms aren't being switched out, you know, every year or every other year, et cetera.
And I would think as a board member, you would want to do that because of your risk of liability. You would want to make sure that there's you know.
Well, as a board member, I may not even want to take that step. I may want to recommend that, but today you have my letter of resignation. Because I might not want to take on that risk determine where it does lead.
That's a good point.
This is not I mean, this is a very dramatic example, but if you're a non-family member of a family-dominated board, whether it's public or private, this happens all the time.
So we don't know if we have a new
CFO. Not exactly this dramatically, but...
We know that the old CFO did not sign the cert, and they filed on time, which would usually, that means somebody else is behind the scenes, you know, doing things.
But the old CFO is gone.
Well, he didn't sign the cert for the most recent filing.
And that you're saying he did, in most cases, the CFO won't do that for what reason? Because they're not familiar enough with, or?
Wouldn't want the liability.
Well, yeah. Or if you're a CFO consultant, you may say, I'm not an employee of the company, therefore I'm not an executive. I'm just an acting CFO. I'm not an executive, so I don't have that authority to sign that certification as a chief accounting officer. So I won't.
But I'm going to make a comment, and you'll correct me if I'm making an incorrect comment. But if I'm a permanent employee and I'm a sitting CFO of a public company, I don't sign a cert.
There's a problem.
The 10-K doesn't get filed.
Yeah.
It doesn't get filed. So it's a zero-sum game.
Yeah.
We're going to have to stop. Thank you very much. This was, this is not one of those cases that's going to have a very clear.
No, I did that on purpose, Larry. I hope that was okay.
I that's life, you know.
Yeah, it is. It's messy.
Has anybody been in a situation comparable to this?
Can we ask Tracy?
I was on the periphery of the situation like this.
So what happened?
A lot of bad things happened. Books were being cooked, and the public company.
Yeah.
The audits were all clear. Until somebody blew the whistle. And then the SEC opened an investigation and all that. I was a consulting partner from, so I didn't have anything to do with any internal books, but I saw the whole thing unfold, and unfortunately, I knew more people than that. So I can't, mention the name of the company, but.
How were the books cooked? How was it specific?
So I think if you mentioned if you're a high-tech industry, so, until they changed the rules, technology companies in the 90s, very, very common practice would be to ship product,
right?
And then take returns in the beginning of the next quarter.
Stuffing the channel.
Exactly, stuffing the channel.
Every
it's a very, very common practice.
No.
And so in this case, what happened was not only were they doing that, but there were, behind the scenes with that, there was a lot of other things happening. And all the audits were fine. But then somebody blew the whistle and said, called up the SEC and said, these guys are cooking the books, and then boom, boom, boom. And things just went, it really blew up. And I believe actually the chief accounting officer actually ended up going to jail.
Tracy, will you share with us what you feel the best practices are, and do
without divulging confidentiality.
So the CFO was let go.
Right.
They brought in a CFO consultant who, because he was not an employee and not an executive of the company, would not sign, which is why the CEO signed. The CEO, don't know how many shares he owns, but he's been the CEO for a number of years. They are bringing on new board members because as part of the capital raises they're doing, those investors are insisting on bringing in new board members. So there is a change of the board, and I think there has been a turning of the corner, but I see no indication that they're going to do anything about the CEO. I think that the CEO was very busy and focused on the operations of the company and sales and let the CFO do whatever he wanted. That's sort of what I see. There is no indication of any illegal acts at all.
Can we just write it off to stupidity and?
I think some bad judgments were made about hiring the CFO and bad judgments to continue his employment.
Well, I was imagining just what you described, but then I came back to the bullet point on your page two about no going concern for the last 6 years, but always on the cusp. So, I was visualizing a small company, CEO, who is a tech guy into the business, bring Tom in, he'll deal with all of the reporting and the financial stuff. I don't understand it, I'm not gonna deal with it, blah, 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 blah. Yet, the business has been on the cusp.
So when you look at a going concern, you're looking at, is the company gonna be funded through operations, or is the funding gonna be, if it's a pre-revenue, then there's no operations. It's all through capital raises. Or is it going to be funded through operations and capital raises? And the company was always able to get enough capital and to stretch it. And when I review forecasts, it's actually fascinating. They're always dead on with the expenses because that's what they can control. It's the revenue that they can never project properly, and they always want to stretch it. And so in this situation, I know that in those forecasts, the revenue was always significantly discounted because even in looking retrospectively back, at the management's ability to estimate, it was found that management did not have the ability to estimate their revenue. And able to see it was to the tune of X percent. And so in looking at the forecast, the revenue number was always discounted in order then to look at the forecast to see if they still had enough money. So with the capital raises and the revenue numbers from operations, they were always able to get by. Substantial amount of procedures were applied to revenue. So I don't think there was any channel stuffing going on because there, and that's where the SCFO, at least one time, basically told the audit firm, "You're doing too much work," and the audit firm said, "Actually, no, we're not. This is a high risk area, and we need to apply these procedures."
Right.
So I hope that answers your question, Mike. But it's you look at a whole host of things, including management's ability to estimate, and if necessary, you discount those projections so that you feel comfortable that you have a true picture of where the company's going to be a year from when the opinion date is.
Well, you want to benchmark a little bit too in terms of competitors, see what their sales growth has been over the past 5 years, what kind of margins they have?
You can do that, but that is not necessarily empirical evidence that you can use in an audit. It's something you can look at analytically. And because this was a small public company, you would have to, you couldn't really benchmark against a bigger company because it would be apples and oranges. So you could do that, but it's typically not done.
Thank you very much, Tracy.
All right, thank you. Good job, Ford. Very good job. So.
Hope to see you next month. We will be sending out something on Monday about our next program. See you then. Have a wonderful summer.
Thanks.
Thanks, Larry.